I'd like to get things started. I know we've been promised a break, but in the interest of making the most of our time, we have about another 20 minutes. I know some of us have to leave for parking restrictions. I have to run a few blocks to teach. And I want to throw it to the floor to come up with questions. I think there's a lot of burning questions and things that were inspiring here. A couple of things I want to throw at you. I mean, the power of categorization and marketing, that is a huge productive literature on this, how we make up categories and how we cross over categories. I mean, crossover SUVs is a good example of a category that was born by crossing over two categories. And I've done a lot of work on comfort food. You talked about restaurants should only...
It would be okay for it.
Hang on.
Sorry.
Yeah, you're okay.
This is the real boss. You know, it's okay for restaurants to have foods of exceptions from the restaurant perspective, but as consumers are spending more of their food dollars at restaurants and going to restaurants is no longer an exceptional kind of thing, how can we then negotiate that? And to me, one of the fascinating things that's come across throughout the presentation is how do customers negotiate this crossing over of categories between a healthy food, a pleasurable food, and its benefits, whether or not we want them to think of healthy foods or not. And what are the kinds of questions that we as academics, researchers, industry folks who can talk to industry people and suscitate research projects, what are some of the questions? I know I have a few that I'm burning up to ask, you know, like if you suffer from allergies from various things, you know, and you want your piece of cake and you are told or culture advertising tells you you enjoy that with a glass of milk, how do you negotiate that, right? What are some of the issues there? And I want to shut up now to throw it to you. What are some of the questions that you've come up with? What are the things, the windows that you'd like to explore here? Yeah, Frederic.
Well, let me just start. I just want to go back on one. I like the expression infobesity because I think it reflects and captures a lot of the complexity of what we live today in the food world. A lot of information, a lot of conflicting information as well. In French, they call it cacophonie alimentaire, and there's an interesting paper that has been produced in Europe on this particular issue. But I want to bring maybe, because I know I have some, we have around the table some experts also that are more into the neuroscience and the aspect of the brains. There's a paper recently that has been written on the freezing brain. With the technology and all this information, it's getting more and more hard for individuals to compute and come up with a clear decision with all this information that is being added up at a fast pace. My question would be, with the blurring that you're talking about in the various kind of categories as well, healthy meets less healthy, but you know, in an interesting, more less aggressive packaging, how can the brain be more efficient, or can still be efficient in dealing with that? Is there any research compelling data that is available right now, or it should be? Should it be something that we should investigate a little bit more? I have this image of a big ice block freezing the brain of an average food consumer, a mangeur. Is it something that is of any interest from a research standpoint and that could bring some interesting insight from marketing practitioner that I am, for instance? I'm just throwing out here, it's a question slash hope.
I think that's a fabulous question. I think when you were showing your stuff, I've seen in the grocery store, and I've been one of those looking at two labels, and you're going from fat to fat. Oh yeah, but sugar and then fiber, and in the end you go, close your eyes, pick one, right? The brain freezes, and it's like, or pick the one that gives me air miles or Aeroplan, or of course you know, gives me two Aeroplans, and you know I can't fly anywhere with that. So. But we have experts here, so what might insights might we have?
Is that well, I mean, whether that's true, yeah, it is true. That's what we recommend for aging people. Don't bombard them with information, because anybody's brain, the working memory, the largest working memory span for any individual is about 9 items at the time. More than that, then you start forgetting, and then you shut down pretty much. So, yeah, too much information doesn't do anything for you. You end up deciding based on something that has some salient reward value of some sort, like you said. But that's a known neuropsychological fact.
But isn't it the case that even without two, I mean, we've always been heuristic decision makers, right? So it's the rare person that uses lots of information, even if they have it.
Yeah, because relying on too much information and going back and forth, that's the equivalent of a frontal lobe damaged patient. That's exactly what they do.
And do you end up making better decisions?
Yeah, they don't do good decisions. So yeah, that our brains are not wired to handle too much information at once.
But we do have some good shortcuts for dealing with too much information, right? Different heuristics. And
yeah, that goes back to what we were saying. You're not
I'm agreeing with you. Yeah.
You're using your gut feel. Right. That's what it goes. You're not a markers.
To add on that, if I look at the communication marketing sector, to address that challenge of trying not to provide consumers with too many messages at the same time, food companies are trying more and more in their communication strategy to focus on one main message and try to convince you as a consumer that what you should be looking for is heart health or digestive health or whatever the argument is, but just one very specific thing. So in a way, it addresses that problem or that challenge. But again, when you're in front of all those products in the grocery store, and there's one that tells you, yes, you should be looking for, as I told you in my advertising, digestive health products that are good for your digestion. But right beside, there's another one that tells you, yeah, no, but it's heart health that is important. And the other one, after, you know, uses another argument. Even when you take those messages or those arguments one by one, at the end, they're still compared and all mixed up together on the shelves, and it doesn't make it easier for a consumer to make a decision.
But I just want to, from the flip side, food companies are no different than consumers. I mean, they're also looking for the one, you know, don't bombard me with too much public health concern and research facts. Just tell me what's the next hot ingredient, you know, is it, or flip. I used to work with restaurants, you know, or is it going to be pomegranate next year? Or what's the hell, the new trendy thing I should put on my menu, you know? And it's like, okay, forget that, you know, that's not the question to ask.
It's interesting your comment, because one of the things that we observe more on the marketing side of food companies right now, especially food processors, and again, when I touched the point earlier about if we focus a little bit more on food processor more than retailers, because these guys are in a different position in the marketplace, kind of, we think sometimes that they really lead by telling us what to eat. They do with the structure of retail, but at the end of the day, they turn to a guy called a processor to come up with the R&D and the product itself. And I want to go back and just share with you a little bit of the feedback that we have from marketing managers that are saying, for the last 5 or 6 years in many categories, we've been very rational on saying, okay, this is what we know based on science. This is what we need to convey to the consumer, because that's the attribute that he's looking for. That's going to give me the edge on the market. Now what we see starting, and that's, for me, I'm concerned about that a little bit. I feel some of these leading marketing managers giving up on two rational attributes and shifting to a more relaxed emotional proposition by saying, well, I think the era of focusing on a clear, functional, scientifically driven attribute, it's off. I'm going to go back to the softer things, color, fun, makes you look good. And some of these managers are kind of reassessing the importance of science in the marketing proposition right now. We feel that because that's the kind of reaction we get, and at the same time I feel that troubling, because I think with all the science that we have, we know more today than maybe 10 years ago on how to better. So I just want to bring that again in the middle of the table and share that kind of feedback that we get from young marketing managers, okay, and I'm saying below 30 years old, dealing with millions of dollars, propelling messages out there in the conversation?
Well, first of all, I find fault with your definition of young, but we can discuss that later.
We're all, we are fortunate here to, I want to introduce Thibault, because Thibault has been involved with the food industry, but has moved to do consulting on sustainability, so we are very fortunate. And I think there's a parallel here between what the green movement has done, which is making normal or everyday a behavior that didn't used to be, i.e. recycling, taking care of the planet. And how do we then move up, follow that example, and getting people to eat healthy through various claims and whatnot? So maybe you can share.
Thank you, Jordan. I'd like to make make two comments. One about the subject of simplicity, and I completely agree with you, Frédéric, that it's the decision-making process is getting more and more complex, and that a lot of people are just throwing the baby with the water of the bath and going to the fun, going to the Facebook experience, the social networking gimmick that's going to entertain people and influence their decision. But yet it's not addressing the real issues. And I just want to throw a curveball there. You talked a little bit about innovations coming from the ethics category. You asked about sustainable sourcing in terms of fair trade, etc. More and more consumers now, and more customers, like retailers, like Walmart, for example, are also adding to their already long list of criteria, of purchase decision criteria, environmental and social, or ethical, or I would say ethical criteria, touching to the relationship between the product they are buying and the environment, and the relationship between the product and the social realm, beyond their person as a consumer who's going to eat this. And to me, that's another curveball, because it is making the decision options and the decision process even more complicated. You know, before you had to buy a Kit Kat, and you had to decide, okay, am I allergic or not? Okay, peanuts, okay, Kit Kat doesn't have peanuts. But now you have, if you listen to Greenpeace, and they've been very effective in their campaign against hydrogenated fats, palm oil. You know, now you have to decide whether this is actually sourced from ingredients that are sustainable. And so that was one comment I wanted to make. So it's just make. I agree with you that the picture is getting more complex. It's still not showing necessarily the numbers in terms of whether the industry is putting out, but it's in the pipe.
Yeah.
You're hearing about it, and we are hearing about it from food manufacturers and from their customers who want sustainable purchasing or supply criteria. And then the second thing to draw this point is, when you look at one of the things I think that the environmental movement has done fairly successfully in terms of trying to changing behaviors that in the way we impact the planet, is not so much focusing on the silver bullet and the eco product, but trying to change behavior also. And that's to your point, which is the diet, you know, which is really a behavior, a complex behavior. I think that's my second comment would be more that how do we help simplify the purchase decision, since our brain can't process too much? And then B, how can we affect more the complex behavior in, okay, maybe I can sell my car and only take the subway or public transportation to save the planet. So what's the translation in terms of food? But maybe it's not that simple. It's changing my behavior so that for my life cycle, for the year, how do I change my transportation, my transportation mode and decisions throughout the year, so that I can reduce my overall impact? Because maybe I don't have a car, but I'm going to take a plane.
Mm-hmm.
You know, instead of changing a more local destination, I'm not going to Florida, but going to Quebec for vacation. And that's a change of behavior. And I think the analogy is the environmental world has been able to change to trying to focus on behavior rather than discrete decision process, mm-hmm. because there is that notion of there's a more of a systemic understanding of the impacts.
Would you say holistic? Because one of the things that I'm picking up is the way companies think is looking for a ingredient, a health benefit to sink R&D on. Consumers are looking for that piece of information to focus on, whether it's calories, fat, or whatnot. And it seems to me, and I think most health experts say that, you have to take a holistic view.
Right.
But how do we then translate that into marketing policy, communication messages? I mean, we're marketing professors. We teach our students, you can't be all things to all people. You got to make your message clear. You got to stand for something. How do we then translate that into decision-making from the consumer perspective, from the company's perspective?
Right, the idea of going more holistic in the approach or having the more systemic view is more and more in fashion, and it's important, it makes sense, but it's also so complex from a marketing standpoint to address, and I'm not saying that at the end of the day it should not be done, because that's the future, and we're all going to be forced to find a way, especially food industries, and I would say, when Isabelle mentioned bridging the gap or making sure that science, regulators, and food industry should start to be working in a less aggressive way, or collaborate in a kind of more open innovation setup. It's something that it's easy to say, but it's still today very hard to convince decision makers in this organization to say, okay, folks, let's just change the paradigm a little bit and look at things differently. There's a inertia, I don't know the correct word, inertia, anyway, there's a slow capacity there to say, okay, I can maybe do things differently. But I think we should, as Thibault is mentioning, it has to be there.
We have to lose some people for parking meter reasons. I have to go teaching. I'm just going to make a plug here. You talk about brand experience. There's another session going on. We're going to be having meetings tomorrow again. Tomorrow we are going to be joined by other people, namely Bernd Schmidt out of the Columbia Center for Global Branding, who is looking at brand experience and looking to jumpstart projects. So I strongly encourage you. I have to leave. My colleague David House is going to take over at 11. He's looking at sensations. We're doing projects together. We're starting a Senses Institute at Concordia, looking how we can use the sensations from my end, bringing that into marketing, using that in our positioning strategy, the five senses, and streamlining that into, or mainstreaming that into the brand experience. So I hope you stick with us, and I'll be back at 3. I hope that was a good enough push to get you to stop by. And there should still be coffee there. Is it still warm was the big question.
It's still
hot.
No, it's warm.
It's never been hot. So lukewarm coffee out there for you. Okay? Thanks a lot, everybody.